We're going to be bringing on right now on the Corky's Hotline our good buddy, editor of GoalSheet.com, Bruce Marshall. And Bruce, what'd you think? Was it goaltending or not goaltending?
It was a proper call. I don't think the shot was going to go in, but it looked like it would probably glance off the rim. But by definition, yes. I mean, that was a proper call to make there. And remember, if they didn't call that, Looney for UCLA got the ball, and they didn't blow the whistle, he was going to be able to lay it in to tie the game at least. But it was a proper call, a bad mistake for SMU. But they had blown their opportunity before that, and the turnover was really egregious that gave UCLA that chance to shoot the winning three-pointer by Bryce Alford.
Egregious. That's a very big word to be used on my show, Bruce.
Well, we've seen a few egregious things today. And also egregious was UCLA's collapse that let SMU run off 19 straight points in the second half when it looked like UCLA was going to be ahead. I've never seen a day, John, where we've seen more streaks like this. That 19-0 run in the UCLA game the other way, and then Bruins 8-0 at the end, and how about Georgia State scoring the last 13 of that game against Baylor when it looked like the Panthers were dead and buried in that one. So it's been a day of streaks, and we're not done yet, and it looks like right now NC State might be ready to run off another one as they're getting back in this game against LSU.
Hey, staying with the UCLA game, Nick Moore, the American Conference Player of the Year, he had two great looks there after UCLA took the 60-59 lead. He couldn't get either of them.
Right, and you know, it looked like almost Looney after he got the rebound for the first one might have been fouled, but the ball bounced very neatly to Moore, and he did have a look, and it was before the buzzer. So you know, they had clear shots. SMU has itself to blame for this game. I mean, that was it was a defensive mistake on the goaltending that they made, and they had chances after they surged ahead. I thought UCLA was completely done in this game, John. But let's also tip our cap to Bryce Alford. Without his three-point shooting, UCLA's nowhere in this game late, and he certainly brought the Bruins back from the dead today in Louisville.
I was going to bring him up from the standpoint. Him and his dad have taken a lot of heat. The kid took a lot of heat last year, and I thought he'd get a pretty good job for a true freshman coming off the bench. This year, they have absolutely no depth. They got 2 points out of their 7-foot freshman off the bench today, Thomas Welsh, but they have no bench. These guys are having to play, you know, 37, 38 minutes. Some nights, Norman Powell's had to play 40, and Bryce Alford's taken a lot of criticism. He's had some awful shooting nights, but he's also had some really good shooting nights. A lot of Bruin fans right now have to kind of keep their trap shut after that performance today.
I think so. I mean, he really bailed them out today, and it was a heroic effort by him. And, you know, you're right, though, about some of the flaws this team has. Sometimes they just don't get enough scoring inside. They didn't have anything going today. But, you know, all of a sudden, you know, the sea is kind of parting here for UCLA. They're going to catch a UAB team off its own major upset, a team UCLA beat in the Bahamas rather handily back in November. They're one step from the Sweet 16. Who would have thought that, especially on the preview shows on Sunday when all the talking heads, every single one of them, trashed the Bruins. So they got a chance to move to the Sweet 16 and against UAB on Saturday.
Hey, you mentioned the UAB-Iowa State game. Boy, Fred Hoiberg, he has to be going back home with his ball club, extremely disappointed. They're a really talented team that just didn't get it done today.
Yeah, it's one of these spots. You know, in a few of these teams, you come in flat after you win your conference tournament like that. And Notre Dame could have been in the same spot today against Northeastern, but Iowa State certainly looked a little bit flat. You know, I guess that could have applied to UAB, too. It won its tournament in the Conference USA. But this was a matchup. We thought right when they announced it on Sunday that this was going to be a problem matchup for Iowa State, just style-wise, because UAB, a lot of interchangeable parts, a lot of quickness on the floor. You know, they don't have any one star, although Brown turned in some very good performance today. But the matchup was pretty tough for Iowa State, and, you know, they were flat. And sometimes you see that after these teams that win their conference tournaments and everything goes really, you know, they really hit on all cylinders. And it's sometimes hard to recreate that in a first round or a round of 64 game. Notre Dame had problems today, and Iowa State certainly did, more so against UAB.
You know, depending on what conference it is, I think a lot of these kids, you know, so many things happen. They win the conference tournament on Saturday or Sunday. They're sitting there late Sunday, maybe on the East Coast, and they find out they're going here. Next thing you know, they're on an airplane, and before they can really kind of get mentally focused and physically, they're pretty banged up. I mean, some of those conference tournaments, depending on, you know, who's in the conference and the style of play, I mean, you can come out of there really banged up.
You're right, John. And that's why a lot of coaches don't seem to mind if they know their team's going to be into the big dance and their seed isn't going to be impacted too much by what happens in the conference tournaments. They really don't mind losing, I mean, in those games. It's tough playing three or four games in a row. That can take a lot out of you. Also, the prep for the big dance here. I mean, everything happens real quick. You don't have scouting reports right out. You don't know who you're going to play until late Sunday afternoon. Then you got to try to get your scouting report together. There's travel. You have very little practice time to work on your game plans. And it's everything changes for this week. And it really is like another season. And these teams that have been through it before, a lot of these coaches have, but some of these players going through it the first time, it is different. And today, you know, Iowa State did not react as well as it wished.
You know, you touched on the Notre Dame game, and they won in Pittsburgh in the Midwest region over Northeastern. Notre Dame, a third seed, going against a 14th seed. They get their 30th win of the year. They're 30-5, Mike Bray's ball club. That's the first time Notre Dame has won 30 games since 1909. They hung on 69-65, and Northeastern had the ball when Notre Dame was up 67-65, and they turned it over with 1.9 seconds to go, or they could have tied it or won it with a three-pointer.
Yeah, boy, I mean, Bill Cone did a great job with that Northeastern team. He's an excellent coach. The matchup worked pretty well for Northeastern today. Notre Dame just looked a little bit flat, and there was a classic example of a team that really hit full speed in the conference tournaments and won on Tobacco Road against Duke and North Carolina within 24 hours. To win the thing and in the ACC. And, boy, they were vulnerable today. I actually think, though, this is going to work well for Notre Dame just to shake them up a little bit and get them refocused. The Irish will get Butler in an all-Indiana battle on Saturday. And projecting forward, if they can win, I'm not sure Kansas gets through its pod in Omaha this weekend. But, you know, even though Kansas is seeded 2 and Notre Dame a 3, I think Notre Dame would be a slight favorite in that game if they play next week.
Bruce Marshall joining us on the Corky's Hotline. He's the editor and the head man of GoalSheet.com. Butler, as you mentioned, a 6 seed, beat 11 seed Texas, 56-48. Rick Barnes' ball club, 20-14. Last few years haven't been real good for Coach Barnes. And I've been hearing a lot of people down there in Austin. I don't know how many friends he still has down there.
I don't know either, John. I've been hearing some of the same rumors as you. I think he might be in some real trouble here. And even though Texas squeezed into the tournament barely as an 11 seed, one of several Big 12 teams to fail today, but I don't think he was safe at all, and I think he might have needed a run at least into the Sweet 16 to stick around there in Austin. I would not be surprised if a move is forthcoming there. What, it's been 15 years for Texas. The program has kind of stagnated the last few years. It might be time for a change. And I think Coach Barnes maybe really needed a deeper run than he got in one and done after a very disappointing conference season. And a second half of the year for the Longhorns would not surprise me to see a change being made in Austin.
Hey, Bruce, I don't think we really found out a whole lot about Villanova as they paced at 16 seed Lafayette 93-52. But Jay Wright's team, a number one seed, they're 33-2. How good are they?
Good question, John. I've got some questions about the Big East, and we'll find out more tonight, you know, with Eastern Washington playing Georgetown and all. But who they were beating, I mean, I know they're good, but I'm not sure who they were beating all year in the Big East. Jay Wright has had several disappointments in March since his 2009 team made it to the Final Four in Detroit that year. A lot of the same guys here were there last year and 2 years ago, too. So it's familiar names. It's Archie Adocono, it's Pinkston, it's Hilliard, and these guys who have been around. But I think, you know, the jury's still out. I think they were the most vulnerable of the one seeds. In fact, I think Villanova and Virginia, 1-2 in the East, were vulnerable. We'll find out. Whoever it's going to be surviving this North Carolina State-LSU game, which has turned into a real corker, is going to get a shot at Villanova on Saturday. That's going to be a tough game either way for Villanova. They're either going to face a three-pronged guard attack from NC State with three guys who could play in the NBA or two legit first-round picks on the front line for LSU. It's going to be a very difficult task, and I'll reserve my judgment on Villanova until Saturday because that's going to be their real test. It was not today against their former alum, Franny O'Hanlon, and Lafayette just outclassed tonight in that game in Pittsburgh.
Well, Harvard almost took down North Carolina earlier tonight in the West region in Jacksonville. North Carolina hit a shot late, won at 67-65. And You know, a lot of people they're not writing off North Carolina for a nice little run.
Well, I'm not either. Although tonight was what bothered me about North Carolina all year. I mean, they were up double digits in the second half, and they let the lead slip away. Harvard actually got ahead there in the last couple minutes. North Carolina's had trouble closing games. They have lost 11 times this year, despite the fact it's big-time talent there. I think Roy's got some problems with his guards, although not necessarily Marcus Page. You know, at the point, only 7 assists, only 1 turnover tonight, but 12 points. But I think he forces a bit shooting a bit too much. He tries to do a bit too much. The other guards don't help out as much. The front line, though, he's got NBA guys up there with Meeks and Bryce Johnson and Tokoto are guys who are going to be playing on the next level. So there's plenty of talent there. They played Kentucky pretty close back in December. So they're in this mix. But, boy, they find ways to blow games late, and they darn near blew one tonight and really escaped. And they'll get the winner of Arkansas-Wofford, and right now Wofford's up by that by 1 at halftime of that game.
Yeah, the West Region, Arizona, easily getting by Texas Southern 93-72. And one of the great games today, Ohio State, a 10th seed, took down 7th seed VCU 75-72 in overtime. And that's not that big an upset for me.
No, it wasn't. And, Ohio State was actually a slight favorite in that game. VCU has been playing without its best player since late January. Briante Weber. I thought VCU might get Ohio State because they haven't been that impressed with the Buckeyes, but they came through today. You know, D'Angelo Russell is a marvelous freshman. I mean, he scored close to 30 today, and he's something else. I don't know, though, that he by himself is going to be able to outscore Arizona. And you saw Sean Miller after the game today a little bit upset at his defense because the Cats did give up 72 to Mike Davis's Texas Southern. So I expect them to be a little bit more focused on the stop end there. The matchups, I think, are going to be a lot tougher for Ohio State in this game on Saturday up there in Portland. And I fully expect Arizona to win and move on to the Sweet 16 up the road at Staples Center next week.
Hey, Bruce Marshall joining us on the Corky's Hotline here on the Mighty 1090. If Kentucky goes undefeated, perfect 40-0, and you're one of these guys that's great on putting together all-time lists and all-time teams, where would this team rank all time? And a little bit of an unfair question right now, just because I didn't tell you I was going to ask you this question. But if they finish 40-0, more wins than any team in NCAA basketball history, nobody beats them, where would they rank? Because I don't think they're in the top 4 or 5 teams of all time easily.
I don't think so either, because they've struggled on so many occasions. You've got so many first-year guys there. Now, physically, size-wise, I mean, this is the biggest team that I can remember, and everything is subjective here. But, you know, they've had so many close calls. You know, when we talk about all-time great teams, I mean, we talk about the championship teams. I mean, Bob Knight will tell you that the team in 74, the 75 team that lost to Kentucky in the East Regional or Midwest Regional Final, or Mid-East they called it then, was actually better than the team that went 30-0 the next year. And the 75 team is the one where Scott May broke his hand late in the season. So it's hard to say. I mean, Kentucky's going to have an argument because nobody will have won this many games. And the size-wise, fundamentally, I mean, it's a difficult team to match up anybody with in the past. But for me, they've sleepwalked too many times for me, and I still think they could get nailed somewhere in the tournament. Where I think it might happen, Midwest Regional Final against Notre Dame, I think that's a team that will really have a shot at Kentucky. They're going to have a couple close calls in this tournament. It's not going to be like this Hampton game every time out, and we'll have a better idea how to answer that in about 3 weeks.
Now, is that because you like Notre Dame because they've been battle-tested and they've got veterans on their team that have gone through the war a lot more than some of the kids?
Yes, that's part of it. The fact how they play, the fact they pass so well, and I think that's one thing very underrated. When you play Kentucky, and this is what Georgia did. Georgia, I think, had the recipe to beat Kentucky, just couldn't quite pull it off. Both occasions played them tight, but they were able to get their guards into the lane and then pass very well once there. And they had a couple of finishers up front who were able to do some things. Notre Dame has similar sorts of pieces. This team shoots 51% from the floor. It is a better passing team than Georgia, I think, and maybe better than any team in the country. And I think that's what you need against Kentucky. Get the defense on its heels in some awkward matchups. I think even, Arizona doesn't match up too bad with Kentucky. And Gonzaga probably doesn't either, although I don't think Gonzaga could beat Kentucky. Arizona would have a chance. But to me, Notre Dame, because of Jaren Grant, because of August on the blocks, because of Connaughton and real excellent pieces, experience, passing the ball so well, shooting better than 50%, this is the team I think that has the best shot to beat the Wildcats.
Bruce Marshall joining us on the Corky's Hotline. Now, what's the story over there at UNLV with Dave Rice? He's still taking a lot of heat now that the season's over?
Oh, yeah. He survived by the skin of his teeth. In fact, I was we had a big dinner last night with Tina Kunzer-Murphy, the AD. We didn't ask her anything about it, but she made the call earlier in the week. A lot of people up here think it would have been tough for Tina to pull the plug on Rice just 2 months after she did the same thing to Bobby Houck, and both these guys got extensions from her the year before. But in the end, you know, it surprised a lot of people up here. I mean, the word was that they had a buyout set to go and they were going to do it and did not pull the plug. There's another thought that Rice supposedly has another recruiting class coming. He's got some early signees. Zimmerman, the kid, big kid from Bishop Gorman, could very well sign at UNLV too. So they're going to give him another year. But I'll tell you what, these things, when you put a coach like that more often than not, it ends up sabotaging the next season. And as soon as things go a little pear-shaped, then the rumors start again. Rice is still in hot water, but he does get another year, and that surprised a lot of people up here.
Hey, Bruce, how do you look at tomorrow night's matchup between San Diego State and St. John's?
Boy, it's hard to say because, you know, Steve Lavin's team, you know, backed by one of, you know, his best players suspended. Their performance pattern was a lot like some of Lavin's UCLA teams. Very erratic. They played very well at some times, awful at others, sometimes in the same game. Second half of the final regular season game against Villanova was an absolute disaster, and then they got crushed in the Big East tournament. That St. John's will lose to San Diego State. Aztecs bother me because their shooting can be so erratic. They take a lot of threes for a team that can't shoot threes that well. But you do know that the Aztecs are going to bring defense, and this is one of Steve Fisher's better, if not his best, defensive team. So in light of those offensive shortcomings, they make up for it on defense, and at least we know that's going to show up tomorrow. So that's why we picked the Aztecs to win the game, and we had it 64-56 in the gold sheet for San Diego State. But, you know, St. John's is one of these teams that just scares me because when they're on, they're really good. And it's kind of a scary matchup tomorrow, but we lean to the Aztecs.
All right. Well, enjoy all the basketball. Tell everyone how they can get everything the Gold Sheet has to offer. And, again, during the tournament, you're updating things 24 hours a day.
Yeah, we are. And we got our new issue coming out tomorrow because we're going to update games for Saturday and then on Saturday morning an addendum for the Sunday game. So we'll be busy the next couple days. And, of course, our big weekend issue will be ready tomorrow night, and that's NBA as well. And we do it all again on Monday. We're going to have our Sweet 16 issue. Goldsheet.com, 800-798-GOLD. We go twice a week and even more than that now with the tournaments going on.
All right, Bruce. Hey, thanks, and we'll catch you next Thursday night.
Okay, John. Take care. Thank you.
There you go. Bruce Marshall, editor of Goldsheet.com.